Okay, my name is Alan Burns, 6 o'clock, Dameron Valley SSD Board Meeting, special meeting on February 16th, 2026. Can we have a roll call?
Olivia Anderson.
Kim Sly.
Pat Johnson.
Alan Burns.
Doug Markham.
Okay. Doug, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay. Alan Burns, can I have someone approve the agenda? Has everybody had a chance to look at it?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the agenda as published.
Kim, second.
Kim, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, now we'll, Alan Burns, we'll move on to number three, discussion and vote. Possibly tabling the paramedic transport. I noticed, I listened to the recording last month, and I think we need to say our names when we're talking.
Yeah.
Yes.
I remember that when I first started coming to this board meeting, and we haven't been doing that lately.
Yeah, AI picks up on that when you say your name, then it says it quotes you. But if you don't say your name, then it just says a board member or a person. So
okay.
It helps me.
I just think for clarification.
Sure.
We could,
yeah, I agree. Yeah,
so I guess we'll start a discussion. I mean, I don't mind starting. My name's Alan Burns. I went to that site with the white paper.
Yeah.
It's some study of Utah on the paramedics and all that, the financing, the people and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what I took away from that, reading the whole article, I looked at the short version and didn't really get much out of that, so I read the long version. And, what I got out of it was, seems like there's a demand for EMS people. You know, mm-hmm. paramedics or whatever. The agencies are understaffed. Rural areas typically have more severe injuries, and it's farther from hospitals and farther from paramedics. And then they had quite a conversation in there about the burnout, how the paramedics don't want to be scheduled for shifts and, they're just overworked. And the age, I noticed the age differences too between, like, say, Salt Lake City, like an urban area, whatever you want to call it, I don't know how they, mm-hmm. and then like areas like out here where the paramedics are older, So I think they burn out quicker, I know when I was working, I got a little tired of my job, got a little burnt out. And I just feel like this program these guys are running here, or what we're running here, with training and supplying paramedics to the force in the area, in the county, the whole county. I just think, I really hate stepping back from, pursuing something that moves us forward where we're supplying paramedics. And, if we were to run an ambulance around here and paramedics, I think, every year it seems like they got a whole new class of students, whatever you want to call them, apprentices, and I think, and I've heard it from the chief that these guys move on to other areas. It seems like we would benefit from having fresh people all the time, coming to calls, coming to help people and stuff like that. And I just think that's. Then the other, the other side of what I got from this is. It seems like, you know, the pressure ought to be put on the lawmakers of the state or the county to fund paramedics and, you know, EMTs, whatever, you know, the classifications are that run ambulances. But it just seems like there's more of a demand out in this type of area. And the funding, yeah, it's always a problem, but it just seems like something that we could benefit for sure. I mean, I'll be 65 this year. You know, I know my nice hair doesn't look like it, but I wish it would get grayer. You know, but I'm gonna, you know, sometimes I think I'm having a heart attack. I go on some crazy hikes with some guys and stuff like that, and I probably shouldn't be doing it anymore. And I'm like, I'm gonna have a heart attack out here, you know.
Well, at least so, you go out doing what you like to do.
Yeah, definitely. But
I know one thing: no one survives. Everybody passes on something. Right?
Well, yeah, sure. No one gets out alive.
Yeah.
But my point is, you know, if you know I'm out there on square top, you know, and I do have a grabber, which I thought I had about three of them that one day. You know, I'm gonna wait for an ambulance to come from, you know, Vail or Diamond Valley, where there could be one in the shed right here, you know. And I mean, not that that would save my life when I'm way out there, but you know, I just look at the benefits of that. You know, I've met a lot of the neighbors around here, and I've heard some stories, and some of them are pretty bad. And not that you know, we have a lot more service today than we did, you know, before I moved here.
Tremendous.
Yeah, and I just, you know, some of those stories are horrific, and you know, I just think if we, I just like to keep moving in the direction where we're making it better for the community, and you know, Pat said it once before, you know, it's like, you know, you don't need it until you need it, you know, and then you want to make that call and you hope someone's there in 2 minutes or 3 minutes, not 10 or 15 or 35 or something like that, you know. So that's what I got out of that report. I mean, I looked at all the numbers and stuff. I'm not really a numbers guy. I understand the fact that all ambulances services are underfunded. I understand that. And, you know, I think the chief has a plan for doing this without extra burden on our community, you know, so... Whether or not I understand the plan, it sounds good, but I'm not a numbers guy. So, but that's my take on this situation, and I'm in favor of it. So, pursuing it, and I know it's not something that's going to happen. It couldn't happen, might not happen for 4 years, but I think we have to be a thorn in the commissioner's side to keep it, you know, in the forefront of their conversation or our conversation with them. Before I was on the board, I heard what was going on, and it was like, I think, you know, the commissioners wouldn't listen to the board here maybe once a year. Maybe once every year and a half they could get their attention. And I know Pat's got a good line on this now, and I've been a part of a couple of meetings already, and that's awesome, you know. But what happened before is, you know, it was like pulling teeth trying to get a meeting with the commissioners.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to see, you know, if we table this, you know, which it could be a vote or whatever, it could happen. You know, the commissioners are going to shove this to the side, and it might not come up again for another 4 years. Where if we're talking about it on a regular basis, they're going to get sick of listening to us. You know. Hopefully, and say, okay, fine, you know, serve your community, you know. That's my hope, and that's my two cents. So that's
awesome. I have some questions. Can I just want to, I'm not even sure where my baseline is here, because I'm not even sure what the original mandate was to the chief to do. And as far as what to pursue, I mean, my understanding is we currently have EMS. They go out on EMS calls, right?
Yeah.
So they do that, and we have some EMS and we have some paramedics. What exactly, I wasn't here when board made that initial vote.
It's literally just a little blurb.
So, I mean, what was the intent? I mean, was the intent to pursue getting the ambulance contract for Diamond Valley? What exactly was, I just, not real sure. I mean, it sounds like, is that because there's been problems with Gold Cross or about coverage or things? And like I said, I just don't know where we're coming from here, so where we need to go, because I'm not really sure where we're coming from.
I'm going to concede to Olivia more on her doing fact-finding, but my name is Doug Mark. At one time, I think that, in fairness to the prior board, there was Gold Cross was not in a, I think some of the timing issues, the 24/7 thing for transport, they show up, but it wasn't as timely as I think a lot of the residents wanted. But things have changed since that time. All right, Gold Cross does have a 24/7 presence in Vail, which is 5 minutes away from here, right? Mm-hmm. And they also have a contract that I think there's some issues with it. So when I interviewed, like you did, as one of the people to come on the board, they asked me two things. They asked me, one, is there adequate coverage for EMS and public safety? And I said, yes. Now there is, since Gold Cross has a presence here 24/7. They go, good. And I said, and they did say, I said, are you happy? Yeah, they're fulfilling their obligations. They do have transport now available for people on the corridor. And they also have a contract that, goes until 2029. At the time that they first pursued this, and I would sit on the meetings over the years, and like Al, there was a 24/7 coverage, within the time that they could get there that people were happy with. And then the other thing that they stressed to me, talking about the numbers guy, right? Mm-hmm. So they've had a lot of complaints, but I agree that where we've been and what they've done to get this department up to where it's at, especially with having wildfire and having ways to generate income, which that does, and then plus having all the adequate equipment and everything on board, when they first increased the fees, the SSD fees for the residents, a lot of people were pretty upset. But it needed to be increased for just even at that time, even on the volunteer side, to have the proper equipment, for the firefighters and paramedics and everybody so they weren't going to be injured, as well as we didn't have adequate transportation, the trucks were breaking down. And so I think the direction they've gone in, and that's why I'm glad I'm a part of this, has been really, really good. But they don't want, because they've had tons of emails from others that are not in this room or people that don't show up, that about the increase in the SSD fees. For some people, it's a burden. There's a lot of people that are retired just on their Social Security. Some of them are doing reverse mortgages to live. So that the last thing that they want to have happen is for any situation for the fees to potentially go up. Mm-hmm. So that's why fiscally and being fiscally responsible and looking at how things run from even a business point of view, from staffing, and the biggest cost always with all of this, even though we already have the truck and supplies and everything in it, would be a 24/7 staffing, but also then when there are fires and having backups, and Olivia could probably speak more to that with her husband being an actual firefighter in California, but the last thing they want to have happen is if there's a situation where we come into financial hardship because of adding something that's not going to create a profit based on what I've seen on Medicare reimbursement and everything else, because they won't do it. It happened with actually the Special Fire District over in Hurricane, where they ended up having to fire their chief. They ended up laying a bunch of people off because they went in that direction and they went back to the city and the county, and no one was willing to give them any money. So we have to have things, I think we really need to look at the numbers every time we look at something like this, And but things have changed where we at least do have 24/7 coverage now. And I'm not an attorney, but I also know from the letter that I saw that they had sent to us, and Pat was unaware of it before I was unaware of it. I wasn't on the board before, where the county basically told them that they're happy with the services that Gold Cross offers, and then plus there could be potential legal ramifications. That's what I read into it, if they try to make a change. And the last thing I want to see for us too is being in a lawsuit with a deep pocket company like Gold Cross, and we would have to fight that, and we would have to fund that. So just looking at all the other things, and I had a discussion with Pat too, with wildfire season coming up and priorities. As long as we have the proper, we do have the 24/7 coverage for transport. And the great thing with this, and I see a lot of the, a lot of the calls. I knew that even a lot of the calls before when I was a volunteer EMT were falls and lift assist, which is great because we still have that covered within minutes, right? And so those people that are elderly and the husband can't pick up the wife and vice versa, and that might be something that you and I talk about in the future, Kim, maybe helping to train the EMTs with a fall prevention program, something where people can, there is information out there. I've been involved with it once when I was a wellness director in a retirement community in California. But so that's sort of where I come from on it, and then, in the future, if something does change with Gold Cross and we don't have transport, and then we might, but at the same time, the biggest question mark, too, is the financial burden that it could potentially put on us. But I know Olivia is the one that, had come up with most of the numbers related to that. So that's my take and input on it right now.
Thank you.
So Kim's like, my input, I'm not sure why we'd be pursuing, 24-hour ambulance service through DVFR. But it sounded to me like more what they were interested in is getting a transport permit to do that. I mean, to do 24-hour-a-day transport here, we'd have to get a second ambulance because we send our ambulance if we send them out to a fire, which is a good source for our income.
Right.
But on the other hand, I'd have to ask the chief this too. If now they can't transport even when they're out there, if we could, does that improve our reimbursement from that? I would, I'm 100% for not increasing fees, and I think we need to be fiscally responsible. Talking with people in Diamond Valley, though, they're looking to increase their fees this year for their volunteer fire department to guess what? $550 a year. So they're going to be paying $550 a year for a volunteer fire department that might as well, by the time they get there, just bring out the hot dogs and the house is already burned down. Seriously.
Yeah.
So I think we're getting a pretty good deal for $550.
Yeah. No, where we're at right now is good.
I think what we ought to be looking at with the ambulance service is not so much are we the primary providers for that. I think if Gold Cross is willing to do that, it doesn't cost us any money. If they're going to provide 24/7, that's fine. Maybe what we look for is more of a cooperating agreement. There may be a time when they're out. It'd be nice to have a backup ambulance. And or if there's a mass casualty situation, which could happen on the highway here very easily, can we then provide backup and also provide transport? And I think, to me, that helps them, or if something came up staffing-wise on their part where they couldn't cover 24/7, then we could fill in if need be. And I think that would be something that Gold Cross would be interested in, because that just supports them. We're not taking away any business from them. But it would allow us then to get the transportation permit, which, is good for us. It gives us back, gives them backup, so it gives additional backup to the community. And two, and I'd have to ask the chief, I don't know if that increases our reimbursements when they go out on deployments, as well, if they have that ability to transport, because I hear that sometimes is an issue. So maybe they get called even more if they have that ability to transport. So to me, I would look, if we're going to move forward with the ambulance service, would be to look at getting a cooperation agreement with Gold Cross that we provide backup service when either they're already busy and or if there's a mass casualty situation, we can decide how that works, but what works best for them and or again if they get a time when, because I've heard even though they're supposed to do 24/7, there have been some gaps, and so then we could then provide coverage in those gaps if need be, and it doesn't put them under the gun quite as much, so that makes their life a little easier as well. So to me, that would be my proposal, would be to pursue that with them, more of a cooperating agreement. I don't think we need to look at trying to compete against a private enterprise that's already providing a service. And the counties, I think, contracted with them to provide service throughout the county. So, unless that changes. On the other hand, if we do get that permit and something does change, and as you know, reimbursement changes, things change, and, have I seen ambulances pull out of markets? I have. And then you're left with no ambulance service. And so that just provides a backup for our community as well. So that would be my proposal if we're going to continue that. I don't see, it sounds like everyone's talking about, let's do 24/7 and compete. I don't think that's the road we need to be going down, particularly at this point. But getting that permit, I think, then helps us move forward and provides, additional value to the community without costing any additional money.
Well, that's the question mark, the additional money. We gotta really see the real numbers. We have to put pencil to paper. We can let Olivia maybe speak to that, but we have to make sure from a fiscally responsible point of view that we know what the numbers are, we know what the reimbursements are, and we know what it would take. And if we had to get transport, whether there are any, types of stipulations to that, where we would have to have 24/7 folks on board to maintain that transport license. So there goes the question again, and is the finances? Because I've been in business for myself my whole life, and I know that Pat has too. I don't want to speak for him, but when you look at things and whether there's going to be return and it's going to at least break even, because and then I know that Olivia can speak more to this too, but on the side of even grants, it's not a given that we'll get a grant every year. We might get it one time, and there's more people that are competing for it, and I know that some of the other rural districts that don't have 24/7 coverage from a private entity, they have to look into the idea of full-time transport because they have no other options. But we do. And then, where's the subsidization, with that? So, and I know the last thing that the county wants to do is to try to put, if things don't work, then going back to the trough, to the residents, for potentially having to. The great thing about what this department's done on the wildfire side and the training programs is they've found ways to create income and excess and things that are actually profitable. Anyway, with that I'll just end with that. So.
Thanks, Doug.
Kim Slidell, put some input back in. But looking at the 26 business plan, there's nothing in there about providing ambulance service.
Yeah.
And so there's nothing in the business plan, and so if anything did happen, it wouldn't be happening this year under any circumstances.
Yeah.
And again, my proposal to continue to pursue this wouldn't be to provide 24/7 service. It'd be as a backup service to the current provider.
Yeah.
And, so that's... like I said, I think that's a whole different ball game, and how you write that contract. Like I said, we're not going to be able to provide backup when our ambulance is, out of town, and that's in that contract as well. That we'll provide that service when when we can, but it's not a given either, and not a guarantee.
I think the what we need to do, Doug Markham, and that's, those are good points. We need to also look into, and maybe as a board, and I know Olivia's done a lot of due diligence with the numbers and everything, but also is there a stipulation that if we did get transport, that we would still have to provide 24/7 based on that, you know, based on that criteria, you know, because then we're back into a situation where to keep that transport license, even to have as a backup, where we're on the hook financially to support that with the people, you know. So anyway, anyone else want to speak?
Yeah.
What if I have nothing to say?
Then I have a few. Then I have a few words.
I'll be gobsmacked.
Okay. Pat Johnson. Let me say that I was the one who called the special meeting of the board. I thank the board for making themselves available. This is above and beyond what we usually do. Our regular meeting is still scheduled for Thursday. The primary purpose of this meeting was basically to clear the decks. This is an issue that has been in front of us for some time. There are differing opinions on the board, and everyone is entitled to their opinion. Everyone, no one will be told what to think, and certainly no one will be ever told how to vote. I appreciate this forum and the level and persuasive arguments and the tone of the meeting. I think has been a very helpful. I just like to comment on things that have already been said. Primarily, one is that the concern about holding the fees at the current level without increases is of primary concern to me as a board member and as a resident, and I believe to all the board. That should be in our quest to provide first class 24/7 365 coverage to our residents. We have to make rather critical and important business decisions. It is the revenue that's generated by the department from the deployments, grants, and training that keep the fees low. I believe the business plan for this coming year is solid, and that we will see results comparable to or possibly exceeding what we saw the previous year. Another thing with respect to pursuing transport that Doug has mentioned, and I completely endorse what he's saying, is that we must avoid any potential for conflict or any adversarial position with Gold Cross. That can be done by negotiation. Any contract, as you know, Doug, and anyone who's being in business, is any contract that's in force can be renegotiated by the parties. That's a thing. I've done it lots of times. The effort to pursue transport that the chief has been directed to by the board under the resolution 2024-1219, and I have just sent another copy via email to everyone, so you have that. That's fresh. Has had a setback. Okay. And that being said, I think there was progress that may have been made that has been set back. We will deal with that. It's just things that, you know, things that happen, things progress, things regress in the course of any business enterprise. We're at the point now where what I'd like to see is, when I say clear the decks, is to put this issue to rest so that we can move forward with in future meetings with focusing on the pressing needs that the board's going to be facing. This is something that could, you know, I'd say the results at this point are uncertain either way. I take the points that Doug has made, that Al made, Kim, Olivia. I know your feelings and your position on this. We've looked at the numbers. I don't think that this is the place where we can squabble over numbers or back and forth. I think that this is my proposal, and we're at the point where we can do one of several things here. One is we can actually not do anything, not present a motion, in which case the prior directive to the chief stands. However, the chief, as I've had confirmed, and as the board is aware, that the chief operates under the directive of the board. And if we say, back it off, let it cool down, that can be done. As Kim has mentioned, there's nothing really imminent here that affects our 2026 business plan. That's an option. We can take a vote either to table the topic, or we can take a vote to pursue the topic. I think at this point everyone's had a fair chance to do it. My feeling at this point is that we just conclude this as discussion and have the chief back this effort down. It is not a priority of the department. It is not. There are many other objectives which we're going to be coming up and facing with. This is certainly not a priority. I believe that it is a critical component of the board members that we need to consider. So at this point, I would just say, we conclude this with discussion.
Can I just say, I just have one quick kind of question or something for us to consider. Olivia Anderson, could we, like you were saying, talking about renegotiating with Gold Cross and such, could we, as a board, write a letter to the county commissioners and ask them when we can, pursue this or again? Or is that something that would be, because they said, you know, we're happy with status quo. Okay, when can we bring this topic up again?
Could I, Mr. Chairman, could I speak to that, Pat Johnson? Yes, thank you. Olivia, this will lead into the rest of our board discussion, and the answer to that question is yes. Okay. That as a board, we can create, we can draft a document, we can discuss it, we can review it. If it meets the approval of the board, we can absolutely do that.
Okay.
So, Alan Burns, I'm not sure, are we going to vote on table on it? So
there is no motion.
Okay.
Kim's like, just some additional discussion before we maybe take a vote. The reason that I'd be interested in consulting with Gold Cross is to see if they have any interest in us being a backup to them. Why would that be important to the department? One, to be able to transport, when they're on a fire, but also potentially to get grants. My understanding is we have 6 aging heart monitors. We can't even supplies for anymore. They cost $66,000 a piece. And we have six of them. That's a lot of money. And that's money that we're going to have to come up with as a board to replace them. If we can get a transport agreement, we could potentially then get grants to cover that and or potentially get some help through the county in getting those.
Yeah.
And so to me, that would be the reason to pursue it, because if not, then we're going to be increasing our fees if we're going to continue to provide the same services that we're providing now.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
And so, you know, that is something that's, you know, in the business plan. Yeah. And it's like, unless we make a lot of extra money on deployments this summer, we're going to have to come up with the money to replace that equipment somehow.
Yeah, so Doug Markham, those are points well said. I'm totally in favor of replacing those monitors. That's a must. So maybe with part of what, between Olivia and what Pat had said too, that if we could draft a letter, even to the county, you know, saying, look, you know, we understand there's 24/7 coverage with Gold Cross. We sort of want to know when you're okay with us pursuing this in the future, getting a definitive answer. But in the meantime, we need six monitors. and go to them for money. I'm serious. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have enough of a relationship with some of those folks that are down there. And they know that's something that's essential, right? Even for the people that show up from our department with what we have, you know, right in place. So let's go to them with something like, maybe like that, where they say, look, yeah, we don't want to have any legal issues with Gold Cross, this. We want you guys to just back down for this moment, and let's see what we can do to get you the money for the monitors. Yeah. You know what I mean? And provide us with what we need right now, and not put the extra financial burden on us. And then getting a definitive answer from them where they're on it, because we don't want to have an adversarial relationship with the county. You know, that's the last thing that I want them to think of us as. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As a community or the board. You know?
Yeah. I'd say points taken by Olivia and Doug on this. I would be willing to draft such a letter. And put it out. I think it may very likely may be subject to extensive review. I can say this, that when that's done, it needs to be a letter that every board member could put their signature
to. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's very wise and prudent, you know, to do it in that way. And then with establishing goodwill and a good relationship with the county. And then, you know, tell them what we need right now. You know, and I think that I really am. You know, I think that we might get them to do that. You know.
And Pat Johnson again. One other thing, Doug, to your point, is that assures that the board, the chief, and the county are not at cross purposes. And there's some moving parts there that we need to take into consideration. So there'll be input from probably six sources respecting that letter. But I'll volunteer to do that.
Kim's like, so just besides being on good terms with the county, I think we should be on good terms with Gold Cross as well. And like you said, see what we can do to support them and vice versa. Because that and hopefully improves the service to the people that we serve.
And then maybe reach out to ask them what they want. You know, what they want for, you know, us as being cooperative with them. Not necessarily even on the transport side, but just building goodwill with them that might lead into something down the line.
I agree. That's why I say. I mean, I think we should start that communication. So I don't want to shut down this process because I think we should be communicating and working together because we're both providing a service to the community. And so to me, that's what we do. And we can say, well, look, here's what our needs are. What can we do to help with your needs?
Yeah.
And hopefully you can come up with a win-win situation for both parties where you end up with a better service to the people of Dameron Valley in the end than what we have now.
Yeah, and a better relationship, right?
And hopefully a better. I mean, and I don't know what the relationship is between the department and Gold Cross. I mean, hopefully, you know, like you said, if it's not good, then maybe that's why we need to sit down and talk, and hopefully we can improve that. And I'd certainly volunteer to do that with a member or one of the chiefs or whatever, to sit down with Gold Cross and just, you know, let them know that, look, we appreciate the service that they're doing, and, you know, what can we do to help you out? And here's kind of where we're at. We're not here to take your job. That's not what we're here. That's not, yeah, at least as a board, that's what, yeah, I'm getting the feeling, yeah, is look, we're not here to take your contract from the county. Yeah. That's not, yeah, what we want. What we want is to provide better service to the people down in Valley and hopefully improve our revenue, which, so again, if we can get a transport permit, that hopefully, you know, improves our reimbursement on deployments and, you know, can help us here locally potentially as well. I mean, I don't anticipate with the number of transports that Gold Cross does, I doubt it'd be very, very rare that we would have to be used, and I don't think that's going to be a significant, hopeful cost to the, you know, DVFR. But on the other hand, too, though, that does help provide additional backup to the community. So to me, that would be what I would pursue.
Mr. Chairman, Pat Johnson here. To Kim's point, that sounds reasonable. But as we cover the next few topics on the agenda, there is a procedure that we'll need to go through beforehand.
That's why I would say I wouldn't do that unless I got a directive from the home.
And that is exactly the correct approach, and that's what we would have to do.
So are we moving on from this Allenburg, or are we moving on to topic three of that?
I can.
Without...
are you going to do the letter thing?
I will do that just as a... You know, I don't think a motion's required to do that. Let me just draft it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I'll do it.
And get it out.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think hopefully it keeps landing, and hopefully, yeah, as a board, we can tell Chief we're working on this, basically what our feelings are, so that they kind of know what direction we're going as a board.
Yeah, as I said, there are moving parts to that we need to take input from.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, well then, Alan Burns, we'll move on from three into number four. Open board discussion. Discuss, no votes. We go down the list here. Proper use of board credentials.
Thank you, Pat Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is discussion for the board, and this is a reminder and an admonition that we have to be a very careful, cautious, and prudent in the use of our board credentials whenever we're contacting anyone. I use myself as an example, if I was to make an appointment or try to get a meeting with a department, an agency, anything else, and I was to show up wearing my logo shirt, my name, and saying I'm on the DVFR board, I have either consciously or unconsciously conveyed the impression that I am, first off, that I am representing the board, that I speak for the board, and that the position I'm advocating is what the board has assigned me to do. Okay, anything else is inappropriate and can't be done. We as a board, the five of us, can act. We can act by acclamation. We can act by motion. We can act by resolution. And anything that we do as a board is valid. We can make an assignment to any board member to represent the board in any contact or anything, but individually we cannot. There are significant consequences to doing that without the board's authorization. I would encourage each member of the board to go through and read the revised June 2025 policies and procedures manual. It's covered in the first 18 pages there, and it references conflict of interest. It references ethics. It references our contact as board members. We've got to be especially careful in social media, where people, postings or conversations on social media, where we can be, where it can be mistakenly presumed that what we think we're making as a personal comment can actually be taken as a board position, because it was like it's known throughout the community that we are the board members. And the second, we've got to avoid any conflicts of interest. That means if you're personal, it means several things. Conflict of interest generally has to do with financial or other personal or other business consideration, but it can also reference personal opinions. And if everyone is entitled in the U.S., there is still freedom of speech. We as individuals are entitled to our own opinion. But when it comes to anything that can be perceived of a board matter, we have to act appropriately. If there's a question of whether to do it or whether to not do it, I would urge everyone to err on the side of caution and not do it. Any questions? The board is available via email, phone call. We can call a special meeting if we need to. We can consult the chief at any time. That's done. It's important. It's really important that everything that we do that can even be perceived as an action, an intention, a directive of the board be done as a result of board action. And we can do that. Number B?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Courtesy notice to the board of discussion items. Pat Johnson again, we are colleagues here. We're going to be working together as the board for a number of years. We owe each other both personal and professional courtesy. And there's several ways that's manifest. I would say that the first is just the courtesy of, if you have anything either as an agenda item or as a discussion item, please, as soon as that comes up, get it published out on an email. Give the board as much information as you can, your opinion on the topic, so that when it comes up either for action or for discussion, the other members of the board have had an opportunity to prepare for discussion. If something, if we don't hear about it until it's mentioned during discussion, it's not fair to anyone else because we just don't have a time to prepare. And some of the topics are going to be kind of technical. We've got to research that. The other thing is if in the course of discussion or presentation, if something catches your ear as not quite right or incorrect, it is appropriate to say, excuse me, can you clarify? Or could we speak about that later? Launching into anything adversarial is both unnecessary, unprofessional, and ultimately unproductive. Okay, but that being said, if anything comes up during the meeting from the board, from the chief, in public comment that's not correct, that you, or that you feel differently about it, it is appropriate to notice it and take just, you know, a courtesy to get it done and resolve it. Okay? That's what you do. Okay.
Right. Thank you, Pat. Alan Burns, letters C.
Could I do number C?
Sure. You want to do number C? That would be awesome.
Pat, thank you. And this is to a point that Doug made in a prior email to the board, and I would like to emphasize this, and Doug's correct, it is regarding the minutes. The minutes are the official record of our meetings. We have a recording going on that will be transcribed by the clerk into minutes. up until the time that the minutes from the prior meeting are voted on and approved by the board, they are a draft. They can be changed. They can be amended by anyone. We've had some discussion on that recently. There's always a resolution to that. But when the minutes come up for a vote and approval, they then become final, and it is a big deal to try to go back and amend the minutes after that time. So it's upon us as all board members to review those as soon as the clerk is able to provide a draft and make comments, suggestions, revisions, so that when it comes up for the vote to approve, that, you know, anything that we had to, you know, that should have been done is already done. As I know from being a prior clerk, and Olivia knows now, a draft of the minutes can be posted on the state public meeting website, and it stays there unless it can be revised at any time until the vote to approve. At that point, it's final. So it's not unusual to see revisions being made after the draft is posted. I think everyone's clear on that, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
So,
okay. Alan Burns, D. We're going to have a preview of opportunity to acquire Type 6 brush truck. Now, is that something
the chief by the
is?
Chief. Could I just say
sir.
One thing before we start on that? I had technical problems with my printer, and I wasn't able to make copies for everyone, but I got this packet, which is here now in hard copy, before.
You don't even have an extra one to make copies.
I don't think so. I don't think we need to, Chief Flagler. I'll pass this around by tomorrow morning. All the board will have an electronic copy of what I have in my hand. Here. Okay? Chief.
Well, since we have a poster.
Okay.
Step up to the podium. Such
a deal. This is a nice podium. Well done.
Looks good work for you there, Chief.
Sir. Everybody was given a business plan for our wildland program. I think everybody has a good understanding the value of this program, what it does. When I came in, I looked at the program, we've made some adjustments. And I came in with experience on this. Right? Cedar Mountain's blood, same thing. And it works very well. Right? You just have to know how to run it. Somehow I fumbled through it and figured it out. So it's very important. It's so important because this is the revenue program. You know, forget any other topics tonight. This program here is it. This is where the fire chief will be very focused and clear, and the board can ask questions. But we must support this. This program brings in our revenue. So when you think about that, we think about how government works. And I mentioned this public, you know, if you take the fee and, you know, $275,000, $280,000 right now, and then we look at our budget, about $2.1 million, right? What we're telling the community is, hey, we are, these employees here, just like a business, are earning their own paychecks, right? And that's the best, I think that's the most functional way the government works. They get out there, they grind, they work, right? And so, in doing that, running that business, I can tell you, the chair and the treasurer sat through a year of us deploying, and they got a strong understanding of it. So any questions, they can, like, they've seen this work. And I want to take any concerns you have, like, oh, is it going to work this year? It works every year. It's just the level, okay? And then saying all that, I gave everybody a business plan at the very end of it, the recommendation, and I'm going to read that to everybody. This came with our business plan for 2026. So at the very end of the plan, and I think it would be good for everybody to go look through that. It's very impressive. This plan, this business plan, this ability for us to work with the state and to deploy is huge for our community, right? And by the way, a lot of departments do this. Right? So anyway, it's a recommendation. This is in the business plan, and this is what I delivered to the board. So we urge the department to replace Brush 1361 and F-350 chassis as soon as possible. There are constraints that exist due to the age of the vehicle. It's a 1999. And the miles on the vehicle, I think somewhere around 270,000. And the leaking of fluids in the vehicle. While the truck itself is running adequately, it's had some issues since. At any point, it may have issues not worth repairing, or we could deploy to an assignment where the leak of fluids could keep us from fully mobilized, and then that did happen last year. This is especially problematic in California, because we all know how they like to cancel you. So, we're not recommending buying another Skeeter. If you want Skeeters, you've seen that big red Wildland truck. It's giant. I'm so glad Mr. Shelley got here. This is a good one. What did the Skeeter cost us?
$336,000 or $337,000.
Okay. So we weren't recommending getting another Skeeter. Just because of the cost. It's a great truck, but there's better ways to do it. But rather a basic 550 four-door 4x4 dually chassis that has a bleed flatbed, and the department can move the wildfire skid. So we have a skid on that other truck that we could, with welders and all this stuff, right, take and move it to a chassis. That was originally what we were looking at. In the process of getting our vehicles inspected this year and getting their DOT inspections and other things done, our mechanic came and he noticed, well, he saw Chief LIDAR, big chunks of metal, right, and some of the fluids. We're like, oops, that's not good. So it runs, it's doing okay. We're going to keep it running as long as we can, but it's becoming a problem. It's not safe for the crews. They travel thousands of miles. They can break down, right? And on top of that, any failure of that unit on a deployment, right, costs us money. It absolutely does. And so we knew we had to change it. Before the business plan put out, we were looking to change it. So Chief Flygar and his searching after the inspection, like, well, we probably should go look for a flatbed truck. Happened to drive by a dealership, which is funny. If you want to believe in God helping us, this is an odd story. He's driving by a dealership. He says, oh, look at that flatbed right there. He pulls in, starts to look at it, and it ended up being a Type 6 fire truck, which they don't sell at dealers. They're wondering why they can't sell it. No one's going to buy a Type 6 fire truck, right? So he tells me, Chief, look, I found this Type 6. This vehicle was built for another apartment. That apartment backed out. It was on their lot. He mentioned it to me. I said, what do they want for it? And I think at the time it was $190. Yeah, thank you. $109,000, which I thought, that is incredible. Because there are comparables in here, and there are three other comparables I can tell you. Just these two. This is one, it's probably in the packet. This is a Super 6, same type of vehicle, but it's a Dodge. $264,000. Right. And then...
Jeeps, do those include the equipment on the back or just the front?
Everything. It includes, yeah. So, and that, they're expensive, so I got them. So anyways, they range anywhere from, oh, here's another one. And this one's like the one we found before, but not even a full workout, $280,000.
So they're just giving it away for what they have in it.
Correct. So we were like, wow, we found this.
That's a killer. Though.
It is. And so we're like, shoot, why go through trouble welding on another chest and trying to find a club? We found this for this price. Now, in the process of the chief negotiating with them, the prices went down to $170,600. Okay, so if we're going to look at this as a board and say, hey, you know, and this is where I feel like my wife finding a good deal at the store, right? I'm kind of telling you, I've got to buy this. You know, but it really truly is something that's $80,000 less. Now, since we've found it, since we put $500 to hold it, they decided to put it out on the websites, and they have four fire departments beating down the door right now.
But with that $500, you have it secured
right now. Right now, we are going to have to. They want us to say yes by Friday morning, or we lose it. Okay. So that truck is going to solve the issue we have with this aging unit, and our entire business plan, our entire budget is built off of two Type 6s deploying, plus a Rams and an ambulance, right? So now we're able to solve that. Okay, so when we look at Type 6s, the two we had last year, if you divide how they deployed last year, each one of them built out $570,733. Wow. Right? It's impressive, right? And if you want to know what the district gets from that, cut it in half. Mr. Johnson used to look at me and say, I'm going to be watching that. Better be right. And it is. We literally spent 10 bucks, right? Get 20, you know what I mean? So the program is super important. So not only is this a goodbye, it also secures us to be able to deploy for like the next 10 years. I'd say about 10 years you're going to get these, you know, for deployments.
Yeah, that's good business.
It is good business. And so to keep our budget, to keep our revenue program going, I just wanted to give you guys just an introduction to this. Mr. Johnson has been working quite a lot on financing. He's been working with the companies. I met with the executive chiefs, Chief Wolf, Chief Flygar. We discussed this. We all said good to go. Brought in the treasurer. He's working on that now. So I believe that, A, for revenue programs, B, to keep the fee low, we should be moving on this vehicle. Now,
what's the monthly? So how many years can it be financed out?
Mr. Johnson, answer that.
I can speak to that in just a moment.
So now we do have the third Type 6, which is the one that's aging. And we put a lot of work in the engine bosses this year. We have two more coming. And those are basically the master's degree level people. It takes 6 years for them to get this certificate so they can take those rigs out. We have four coming this year. So we have the ability to send out our two, plus our limping one, get that thing out on some closer deployments, and we could possibly deploy three this year in a certain amount of time. So
you're saying then we don't need to hire any additional help then to deploy the extra vehicle?
No. We have an entire fire department that shows up in a month. Mm-hmm. This is what they do. They take out ground, they take out our units. So when you look at this unit, like I said, it's about 10 years. It's a Super 6. It's very impressive, and it is unbelievable bargain. So if we don't purchase this, we are going to spend $70,000, $80,000, or $100,000 more.
The worst case scenario.
Right.
You could turn around and sell it for more than
we could. But it's worth so much more. So the treasurer asked me a question, Chief, is it feasible that this unit could pay for itself in a year? It is. We can deploy it that year. We literally have the revenue coming in. So anything else you want me to add, sir?
I just have some financial details when you're finished, Chief.
Okay. So it is vital. Our deployment program is vital. If you haven't heard me, I said it in meetings, and my mother lives here. I'll say that again. I'm a revenue fire chief. That's why I go for all the revenue programs I can get. Yeah. When the board brought me in, I mentioned that. Mr. Johnson, I believe that I've kept my word on that. And we must do that as a district because we provide such a high level service, right? And we're able to do that because we're thinking about our public, thinking about our revenue programs, maximizing them, and being able to give them this staff over here that costs a couple million dollars, right? Yeah. So, anyways, I just wanted to introduce you guys to that. And Mr. Thompson will probably be able to talk about any of the financing or purchasing.
Yes, sir. Okay, Pat Johnson. Thank you, Chief. When the Chief presented this opportunity to me, he was very enthusiastic about it, as you see, and very well reasoned out on our need for it. My concern as the treasurer, the first thing is, how are we going to pay for it? So I've started several things. The first thing I did was a consultation with Teresa at Affinity HR, who has a good feel for our financial condition. So I ran the idea by Teresa and got the thumbs up. The second line of inquiry I made was to Zions Bank, who has financed capital equipment for us before. We have a current lease with Zions Bank. We have the preliminary financial statements for 2025. I was able to provide those to Zions in preliminary form because they are not audited yet. They're aware of that we have to finalize up that process, and got the thumbs up from Zions Bank. Now we're into the details. We do not obviously have the capital funds to write a check for this. And we have several options. They are basically all leases for the entire purchase price. At the end of the lease, we either own the item or we buy it for $1 and it belongs to us. On a 5-year basis, Doug, specifically to answer your question, these are preliminary numbers. I don't think they are favorable to us because they're from an outside leasing company and not Zions Bank. Zions was closed today. I wasn't able to consult with them. I will be in touch with them tomorrow. On a 60-month lease, the preliminary number I have is about $4,330 per month times 60 months. Okay. That's either a little or a lot. What concerns me about that is that we would be obligated to write 12 checks a year for 5 years, irrespective of our cash flow, which is irregular. Okay? The other alternative, which appears to me, and I believe this will be viable both with the leasing company, because they have made a specific proposal to it, and with Zions, is a 5-year lease with annual payments, the first to be due in November 2026, after we have had the chance to run it for a season and generate the income from that. The amount of that annual payment is approximately $45,000. Yeah. So at this point, that's the information that I have. I will make sure that the board has emails of that detail. We wanted to give you the board a chance to look at that, preview, ask questions, because it will be an agenda item on our Thursday meeting for a vote to come up for discussion and vote for approval.
So the company that obviously will give us that 1-year lease, they've done a lot. They've held that rate a while, and they've got people beating down their door, right? So what we have to do is have a yes vote Thursday, and we've got to call them and tell them yes. I think that company is going to be the cheapest, and I think you can explain that.
Yeah, so I had a discussion with, there's a couple different people that we've been dealing with. The company that built that truck is Basin Upfitters. They own the leasing company that we're dealing with, and that lower purchase price that they gave us was based on if we use them for financing. I didn't know that until a couple hours ago. So I just barely found out that. I don't know what the price difference is going to be if we bring in outside financing.
Yeah, that's a fact.
I'd say that we need to find that out. In looking through that, there are some things, at least with the monthly payment program, that I did not find favorable to us, specifically that they front load the lease with the entire amount of interest over the contract so that there is no incentive for us to prepay.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the way it will be in any of the leases that we look at doing.
Yeah. Most leases do. They front end most of them.
So, what we'll be looking for on Thursday is a discussion and the vote for the board to approve the acquisition of it. That we will have the numbers in closer form there. It may take some time to finalize that, but with the vote to approve, we can go ahead with that. We'll have a reasonable time to finalize the lease.
I think the annual aspect of it too, obviously, because you're going to be able to run that thing the whole fire season before there's even a payment due, right?
Yeah. The annual is by far the best way.
Yeah.
If you look at what a type city does in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
It generally the what I'm calling the revenue, not profit, because we're not profit, but the revenue is $40,000. So it gets one call out.
It covers the payment.
There you go.
But so of that 570, though, I mean, that's what you're building.
That you buy it right now.
What are we actually making on that?
50%.
About 50%?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we were 51% last year.
Okay.
On all of our wildland and REMS deployments, it's almost 50 to 51%.
So with a similar deployment, you're basically going to be making $270,000, give or take.
On top of what
one unit, yeah, the end of the year, that's generally what we should have. And when we put in the budget, we put in 1.6 to cover us. We were very conservative. If you look at this, it goes past that. That's for us. We decide where we think our goal point is. Our goal point this year is 2.5. And we hit our goal point last year. And I'm not going to say we're going to do it again.
Yeah.
So we're expecting to revenue out much higher than we put in
right. Yeah. That's good business sense. You know?
Great.
I that's the one thing I'm really impressed with what the board did in your department, getting the wildfire division up to the point where it's actually generating revenue. And I was impressed with one of the meetings before I came on the board that you mentioned the fact that you're wanting to put a reserve aside, and I know that's a big thing for Pat too. And wouldn't it be amazing if, you know, we have more in reserves? And even to the point where maybe even down the line, I mean, we will see, right? But even if you can obviously at least maintain the fees to the community, but maybe even at some time,
well,
even lower, right?
Yeah, the board could decide on that.
Yeah, but at the same time, yeah, this in the deal that you found, I mean, we know what things cost, you know, but
these superstitions are $300.
Yeah.
So we did find a deal, and I think that's kind of work with us.
Go ahead, Olivia.
Yep. Were you done?
No, please.
Okay, Olivia Anderson, mm-hmm. I was just wondering, you said the price is $170 with the lease, but if we don't use them with the lease, then is there a different price?
Yeah, I know.
You'll have to find that out.
He just got
a call tonight by the representative that approved the 1 year lump sum with the lease company, which the builder owns. Mm-hmm. They informed him tonight, no, hold on, if you don't use us, it's going to be a certain amount more. And they can do that.
Yeah.
I would suggest we'll find that number out.
Yeah.
You'll email it to the treasurer, and the treasurer can get that.
But they are willing to do one annual thing.
Yeah, so on the annual, so
five annual payments. Right.
Yeah, so it'll be five annual payments. Yeah. And with that, Pat, just so I can clarify, off of the monthly payments, they drop another $12,000 off of that, of their interest and fees.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was $211,000 basically is what they were basing it off of with interest and fees, they dropped that down to $199,000. So if you take that, it's $45,813 a year is what the annual payment is. That's about $3,800 a month. So that has come down.
That's not bad.
On that fee. But I can reach out to them in the morning and just see what, if we bring our own financing or if we just decide to write a check for it, what that number would be. Obviously, we're not going to do a check.
I do want to mention the board very clearly. I want to be very clear with this. This is a priority for the organization. In order for us to be conservative and be able to keep fees low and be able to, we have to have a successful program. So I would just urge all of you to understand that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, look forward to that Thursday details. Okay, number E, if there is any additional notification, notify the chairman, I guess. Any more agenda additions? I guess that goes for future meetings as well.
We will do that. Just as another note, the board got numerous emails from me today. One was the financial detail from Affinity. Those are multiple pages of all the transactions. Those numbers are summarized into the two pages which you also got. I apologize for not including that on the first one. I realized that, and that's the second. And Doug, those will be the pages that you'll use in the PowerPoint. I'll get that again to you with my. Well, you already have that, so
yeah,
I don't need to do that.
That's great. That really helps a lot.
And the agenda for the February 19th meeting, everybody has in draft form. I'd like to finalize that up by tomorrow. So if anyone has any additions, deletions, suggestions, please let me know. Otherwise, we'll get that. I'll get that to you for your approval,
okay.
And then to Olivia to put it on the side.
Yep. All right, then I guess on to public comments. We have two people public. Okay. All right, Alan Burns, can I get a motion to adjourn this special meeting?
Olivia Anderson, I'll make a motion to adjourn this special meeting.
Doug Mark on my second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much.
Good job.
Yep, very good.
Thank you. Thank you all.